Welcome. We're glad you've joined us for this Hand in Hand podcast. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization, and we provide information, classes, training, and lots of support for parents like you. We call our approach Parenting by Connection, and it's based on the insight that you deserve good support as you parent, and every child needs lots of connection in order to thrive. We offer tools to help you foster support for yourself and connection in your family. We hope this podcast gives you exactly the kind of support you're looking for.
So welcome, everyone. We're really happy you're here today. The presentation that we're talking about is Why Does My Child Hurt Other People? And What Causes Aggressive Behavior in Children? And my name is Kristen Volk, and my co-presenter's name is Kathy Gordon. We know your time is precious, so we really thank you for taking your time out of your busy lives to think about parenting and for doing all the juggling you had to do to join us today for this teleseminar. We're going to be giving you some really fresh ideas that you can take away from this teleseminar on what causes aggressive behavior, and we hope that you'll try them with your children. There are several parents registered for the call. I'd like to first talk a little bit about Hand in Hand to allow people who are joining the call a bit late so that they can settle in. So Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization based in California. We have instructors all around the world, including myself and Kathy Gordon, my co-presenter. And after many thousands of hours of real life experience working with parents and children, Patty Whipler founded Hand in Hand in 1989, and it was called the Parents Leadership Institute originally, until we changed the name to Hand in Hand. And so our mission is to really provide lots and lots of support to parents and provide them with insights and skills they need to listen to and connect with their children in a way that allows each child to thrive. The Hand in Hand's vision is a world that really supports the difficult work of parenting and fosters meaningful personal connections to move us toward a sustainable and peaceful world. And there are a few core beliefs that support Hand in Hand's mission. And so first of all, we believe that children thrive when they have a warm physical and emotional bond with their parents. We also know that parents want to be close to their children. They want to love their children fully, and they want to see them thrive. We have seen that feeling disconnected and stressed causes behaviors to flare and connection to break down. And this happens for both children as well as for parents. So we use listening as the key strategy for building connection. And we do this both parent to parent to give parents support, and then we also do it parent to child. And listening conveys deep respect and creates enough safety over time to dissolve the emotional tensions that disrupt caring relationships. So when parents listen well to a child and they set limits well, children instinctively offload their negative feelings, and they regain their sense of connection and good judgment. And then we also teach parents how to listen well to each other, because when a parent has a good listener, it can help them feel less isolated and less stressed. With the genuine support for the hard work of parenting, parents can strengthen their connection with their children and repair it when stress has interfered. So in total, we have 6 listening tools. We have the 4 parent-to-child listening tools, and these are called special time, stay listening, setting limits, and play listening. And then the 2 parent-to-parent listening tools are called listening partnership and parent resource group. So we encourage you to reach out for the support you might need for your own parenting, so that you and your child can really thrive on the deep love that you have for each other. And Hand in Hand offers many resources to support parents really well. And all of these resources can be found on our website, at www.handinhandparenting.org. And we're going to mention some specific offerings at the end of our talk. So we'll give you those details then. And I just want to say thank you again for the people who joined a little bit late for joining the call. The topic is, why does my child hurt other people? And what causes aggressive behavior in children? So I'm going to introduce myself briefly. My name is Kristen Volk, and I'm just really happy to be here and to do this teleseminar today. I know it's relevant for just about every parent out there. And happy to have my co-presenter as well. Her name is Kathy Gordon. So I'm a single mom. I have two children, a 10-year-old boy and an 8-year-old girl. I live in Denver, Colorado, and I'm a certified hand-in-hand instructor. And I became involved with hand-in-hand, because our family had multiple trauma incidences in a short period of time when my children were 2 and 5. And this caused basically my children's behaviors to develop into situations that I really couldn't handle. This included a daughter who would beat up her older brother, who was 3 years older than her, and a son who would attack me. And I really tried all the traditional methods of discipline, but they weren't working. And I had gone everywhere I could think of for help. I put both my children in play therapy. I had them in a therapeutic school, and I consulted with professionals there and in my larger community. But it wasn't enough. My children were doing fine in school and socially for the most part, but it was in my care when they were with me that they really fell apart. And I just was not equipped to handle these kinds of behaviors. And the aggressive behaviors that were happening at home with each other and with me. And so a friend of mine referred me to Hand in Hand, and I started taking their signature class called Building Emotional Understanding and started to see the most profound changes in my children as well as myself. And after that class, I decided immediately that I really needed to teach this to other parents so they feel supported in a deeper way that had the potential to actually heal our children's hurts. Both our children's hurts, actually, as well as my own hurts, and to transform a family. And now I'd like to invite Kathy to also introduce herself.
Thank you, Kristen. So welcome, everyone. My name's Kathy Gordon. I live in Los Angeles, California, and I'm the single adoptive mom of a 10-year-old boy. He's been with me since he was about 10 days old, and he was born here in L.A., my son was about 3. I'd read a few articles that Patty had written, so I knew about Hand in Hand, but I really started learning about and using the tools when my son was about 5, and that was out of desperation. When he'd get upset, he'd get very physical and aggressive, and nothing was working. So, in fact, I had to start shadowing him when he was 4 at preschool because he was having such a hard time, and we were about to be kicked out. I was really at my wit's ends. I was getting nasty emails from a mom at the preschool, and I felt like such a bad parent. And, you know, in my darkest moments, I had this horrible thought I was raising a sociopath. And I wondered, you know, when is he ever going to stop hurting? So if any of that sounds familiar to you, whether it's trouble at preschool or hitting the baby or the dog or hitting you, we're just so glad that you're here. We have hope to offer, and we have tools that we believe can help. It's one of the reasons that I became a Parenting by Connection instructor. As I practiced the Parenting by Connection listening tools, I was able to help my son, and it brought more peace to our family. So as an instructor, I'm really excited to share what's working for us, for my family, and to share that with parents like you.
Thank you so much, Kathy. I'm really happy you're here.
Thanks, Kathy.
Yeah. So today in this teleseminar, again, it's called Why Does My Child Hurt Other People and What Causes Aggressive Behavior in Children? So we're going to be talking primarily about the why, what causes the aggression. It's very easy for us as adults when we see an act of aggression, to think that it was completely intentional, unprovoked, and thoughtless. We ask to ourselves or to our child, why in the world did you do that? You know, what were you thinking? We just don't understand it. Well, we hope to shed some light on that today. And after we talk about the why, we'll be introducing a few of the listening tools that we teach in Parenting by Connection. And then in about 2 weeks on Monday, February 24th at 11:30 a.m. Pacific time, there's going to be another free teleseminar titled How to Stop My Child from Hurting People. And the presenters will go into much more depth about the tools that we'll be introducing today. So if you want to register for that, you can go to the Hand in Hand website. And even if you can't attend live, you will get a free playback, a recording. So we have a lot of ground to cover today. And here's I'm going to give you an overview of the topics. So we're going to talk about the brain science behind aggressive behavior and the role of fear. We'll talk about what a child's natural instinct to heal from fear looks like, and the inner experience within a child when some of these physiological triggers are happening. We'll also talk about how your reactions to your child's aggressive behaviors play into the bigger picture and how you can get support for yourself. And then lastly, we'll give you some concrete actions that we call listening tools that you can take to support change happening for your child and for your family. And most of all, what we want you to know is that you are good and your children are good. And there is a reason for the aggressive behavior. We can help you get to that reason in order to help your children stop. So now Kathy is going to talk about the brain science behind aggression.
Kristen, thank you. Yeah, thank you. That was a really great roadmap and overview of our talk. So as I mentioned, my son was about 4 when he started behaving really aggressively toward me and other children. And fortunately, I was introduced to some simple brain science, which helped me to understand why he seemed so out of control and explosive. And once I understood why my son was lashing out and what was happening in his brain, I found I had more patience and the capacity to help him. So a few decades ago, scientists thought that the brain developed in sort of a vacuum. Well, we now know that brain development is dependent upon interaction with a child or a baby's environment, and particularly the quality of that connection between the child and their primary caregiver. So you've probably heard a child criticized by the statement, he or she is, they're just trying to get my attention. Well, yes, children's brains are hardwired to seek out connection. And the quality of their brain development and their sense of safety is dependent upon that connection. So a little overview of how the brain develops can be useful. Now, this overview is going to be an oversimplification, and it's going to focus primarily on the vertical brain, looking at the brain from the bottom to the top. So if you look at the brain vertically, you can think of it as being divided into 3 major parts or areas. The base of the brain, or the brain stem, it controls our autonomic nervous system and our alarm system. It's the part that puts us into a state of fight, flight, or freeze. Then most of the middle area of our brain is what's called our limbic system. And within the limbic system, there's 2 parts that I want to mention. One's called the amygdala. This is where we process emotion, particularly fear. And then the hippocampus, which is responsible for processing memory so that we can recall our experience with a time date stamp on them. You know, when you access a memory processed by the hippocampus, you know, oh, that happened yesterday, or oh, that happened 5 years ago. And then lastly, the highest part of the brain, our cortex, this is where we reason, problem solve. We create, and the cortex particularly the prefrontal cortex that's responsible for such executive functioning as impulse control, delayed gratification, and empathy, to name a few. In Parenting by Connection, you'll hear us talk a lot about the limbic system. In the limbic system, that's our radar that tells us whether we're safe and connected. When a child feels safe and connected, they can think. Their brain's more integrated, and they have more access to their prefrontal cortex or higher reasoning center. Thus, they can share, they can play well, learn, and cooperate. With children, their sense of connection can be very fragile, and it can break easily. A simple breaking connection can occur when we turn away to answer the phone. Or there can be bigger breaks, such as being abandoned at birth, as my son was, or spending the first few weeks of life in the NICU, bedtime, going to preschool, a new baby sister, divorce, moving. These can all cause a break in connection to varying degrees and may jeopardize a child's sense of safety. Thus, as a parent, when our child's behaving aggressively, one of the first things we can do is we can look at, well, what are the stressors or breaks in connection that my child may have experienced, either currently, something that's maybe happening currently, or something that happened in the past? For some children, when they feel a break in connection, they might simply come to check in with you, or they might whine, "Mama, get off the phone. Mama, I need you." And this is so they can reconnect. But in other children, a break in connection, it triggers such fear that they may go into a state of fight, flight, and lash out. Well, why is this? One reason is that our hippocampus, the part of our limbic system that processes memory, it's not fully developed until we're about 36 months old. Therefore, early memories and experiences get stored in our brain without a time date stamp. These are what we call implicit memories. These early memories, they go into the brain unfiltered. And when they're recalled or re-stimulated by a current experience, our body and mind respond neurologically as if we're back in that moment in time. But we don't actually, we don't realize that we're actually recalling a memory. And this was so mind-blowing for me to learn, that when we're recalling an implicit memory, we're not aware that we're recalling a memory, but yet our body and our mind are responding as if we were back in that moment. So, for example, I noticed when my son was little, he had great trouble with transitions or things ending. And since he's adopted, I thought about his first transition into the world when he was essentially abandoned. So that first transition, it may have felt like death to him, the death or absence of his biological mother. So my sense is that his limbic system would get thrown into a state of fight, flight, or panic when I said it was time to turn off the TV or it was time for the play date to end. He'd get thrown into that state of fight, flight because his mind and body was recalling, or the current experience was triggering the memory and the experience of that first transition. So my son's upset and refusal to stop playing and get into the tub, it could be called misbehavior, but I saw that the ending of something was actually triggering an old implicit memory, and it was causing him to go off track and often to behave aggressively. In addition, when a child experiences fear, upset, or trauma at an early age, even in utero, then the amygdala, the part of the limbic system that processes fear, it can become hypersensitive. It's as if the brain's thermostat or stress regulator gets programmed to easily register fear and send the message, danger, 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 and tell the brain body to go into flight, fight, flight, at the slightest provocation or at the slightest break in connection. Now, every brain is unique and a universe unto itself, and each child has the ability to handle a different level of discomfort or disconnection. If your child is lashing out and hurting people as mine was, it's possible their brain has a very low tolerance for stress. and is easily triggered into a state of fear. They can easily become re-stimulated. You can think of it as they get thrown into the throes of an emotional bad dream. So if you take one thing away from today, we'd love for you to begin to see your aggressive child as a scared child. So now Christian's going to explain a bit about the release process of fear as well as the inner experience a child has when they are re-stimulated, scared, and aggressive.
Thank you so much, Kathy. I really appreciate your big picture view of the brain and especially what's relevant to a child's aggressive behaviors. So we know from what Kathy said about the brain that any child who hits has fear stuck inside his emotional memory. Now, every child carries fears, and we all do, but not all children hit. Some children do develop other behaviors other than hitting from their fears, but it's really important to keep in mind that children don't hit unless they are afraid. And as parents, we typically are not trained or attuned to read the signs of fear underneath the aggressive behavior, or to understand that our child is signaling us that they are afraid, in fact afraid, because these signs don't look like stereotypical versions of fear, like a shocked facial expression, or screaming, or an open mouth, or shaking. So if a child is not supported in processing and releasing his fears, then he will use his precious brain power and a lot of energy to manage that fear and possibly even tamp down those signals to us if we rely on behavior modification strategies like a timeout, punishment, consequences, reasoning, and endless lectures. So this is how fear comes out as aggression. And our children really do need an outlet for their fear. Now, many fears happen at a very young age when children are very, very vulnerable and they don't have any control over the situation. It can be a feeling of being threatened, like a loud noise or parents fighting or even a sudden loud laugh from grandpa. Or it can be a real physical threat, like an angry dog, or not being able to breathe after birth trauma, or having surgery early in life. So in either of these cases, whether it's real or it's a feeling of being threatened, our mammalian response is either to the fight, flight, or freeze. And most infants who are completely vulnerable will freeze. They'll withdraw or they'll get quiet because they can't fight and they can't flight. They can't run away. So one of the physiological responses to release that fear when the threat is over is to cry. So in fact, tears contain stress hormones to release the stress that our body was holding. And these are the emotional tears that have cortisol, the stress hormone, rather than, say, tears from chopping up an onion. So the infant tries to cry, and typically, we as parents try to stop the child from crying. Oh, sweetie, you're okay. It's just fine. Oh, it's no big deal. No need to cry. In fact, we can easily get fed up with our child's crying, especially when he's crying for something we think is inconsequential. So we try to stop this very natural response the child has, and we push him to become passive. So what happens is that release response actually gets locked into our child. So with fear, a child almost always has to become physical to work through it as they fight it through. So it really is a physiological need to fight. Or in other words, it's their instinctual drive to heal. What's natural is to show you a wild animal biting, kicking, scratching, hitting. to fend off that threat that they felt. So when a child has a warm, caring adult to move in close to him, he may show you his wild animal. It can be like this wild animal trapped in a corner fighting for his life. Understanding this process helps parents of aggressive children to know that aggressive behavior is a scared child, signaling you that they need to release this trapped energy of fear, and their instinct to heal is working hard. As Kathy talked about earlier, the child won't know he's experiencing an old fear if it's from an implicit memory. And this fear may pop out at any time and very easily in situations that seem like they should not provoke such a response, especially a response that looks like a wild animal. So, for example, a child might lash out or struggle when being put in his car seat due to birth trauma. Or a child may go after another child when being jostled on the playground from a memory of early medical intervention when his body was feeling like it was being invaded and he was completely helpless. So that is part of the release process. There's really more to know here, and you can learn more about it in one of our many class offerings. But now I want to shift us to talk a little bit about a child's inner experience when he is in a state of fear. So the first thing is that when a child is afraid, they feel completely alone. Fear shuts down the ability to feel connection from a caring, loving adult. So they can't even feel our connection that we're offering to them. The child feels like he's out on the prairie all by himself and the wolves are starting to surround him. That limbic brain that Kathy talked about is flooded with fear and can't tell if anyone is there. So things like touch and eye contact are really important to get through to our child and to feel your attempt at connection. The child also feels threatened. So any moment away from your connection is danger to the child. Their brain is saying, danger, danger, danger. A child also cannot make sense of what is going on. He cannot process the information that's going on around him, whether it be facts like a crying sibling, the toy he asked for that's sitting right next to him, or the verbal instructions or cues that we are giving them. His brain cannot take it all in. His mind cannot process it. There is just too much happening, and he cannot understand what is going on. It also feels to a child like the threat will last forever. He loses his sense of time and thinks there is no end to the threat. To a child, the fearful situation lasts 100 times longer than what the reality is. And when a child is scared, he asks, am I going to make it? It's a real question of survival. Will I be okay? And the answer that they give themselves back is, I don't know, it doesn't look good. They also ask, is anybody noticing? Does anyone know I'm in trouble? Can anyone tell that I'm in trouble? Is anyone going to help me? It's a sense of helplessness and not even being able to ask for help. So even if you are there, his mind can't process and his limbic brain can't get the connection you are offering. And so even if this intense state of fear alone, feeling alone is for 10 minutes, it's still 10 minutes of feeling alone, threatened, and in survival mode, and feeling like no one cares. And oftentimes, the questions that the child is asking go unanswered if the child is left to his own, like in a timeout. And then the child will also be feeling the old initial instance of fear. It feels threatening right now, even though it is something that happened a long time ago. So a child putting on his shirt can re-stimulate his birth trauma and put him into a panic because he is feeling all of the fear of his birth like it is happening right now. So now Kathy's going to talk about concrete steps you can take to support a child's mind, a child's emotions, and their brain to calm down those aggressive behaviors.
Thank you, Kristen. That's a really powerful description of what's happening inside our children when they lash out and try to hurt us or something or someone else. And I'll admit, this can be difficult for me to remember when my son gets so angry. I need a lot of support to help me remember that. Kristen's going to talk about how to get that support in a minute. So how can I help my child with all this fear and old hurt that's stuck in his limbic system, which we like to call it their emotional backpack? As Kristen said, because a scared child cannot feel my love and attention, we have a tool that we can use preventatively. It's called special time. And again, the teleseminar on February 24th is going to explain this tool in much more detail. And there are many articles on the Hand in Hand website that give great anecdotes. And there's an entire booklet on how special time works well. So briefly, special time is a finite amount of time, maybe 5 minutes or 20, during which I give my child my undivided attention. I follow their lead, playing what they want to play. And it's important that I take the less powerful role and I just delight in them, pouring in my love and connection. The length of time is actually less important than the quality of time and my attention. And the activity is not important as long as I'm taking the less powerful role and following their lead and just delighting whatever they choose to do. Now, you may actually have some considerations of safety, time, or money, but in general, we really try to let them have the power to choose what they want to do. With a scared, aggressive child, it's really important to ramp up the amount of special time they receive. You know, just like in cold or flu season, you might give your child more vitamins or make sure they get more sleep. You do things to boost their immune system. The same is true with a scared, aggressive child. They may not be able to feel our connection, so that's a time to give them as much special time as possible, every day if possible. Now, even with lots of special time, a child may still lash out, since, as Kristen so beautifully explained, they're instinctually driven to heal. They need to get that stuff up and out of their limbic system. So when you start to do lots of special time, it may actually look worse before it starts to get better, because you're increasing the safety and the connection, so their instinct to heal becomes even stronger. So what to do in the moment? Let's say at the end of special time, when the timer goes off, and there's that limit that they bump up against, and then my child lashes out. Well, when I'm calm and resourced, I can see his anger and aggression as his instinctual drive to heal. Because the truth is, no child wants to hurt their parent or another child. It is really very scary to feel that out of control. In that moment, my son is asking for my help. He's asking me for some containment. So as Kristen outlined, my first step after I make sure that I'm calm is to move in very slowly and stop the behavior. Now, this can also be difficult for me because my impulse is I want to charge towards my son and make him stop. But he's already feeling scared. So if I can move very slowly and even announce, "Sweetie, I'm going to help you stop. I can't let you hurt me." Or, "I can't let you hurt your clarinet." I gently put my hand on the clarinet, or I gently encircle and hold him in a way, gently hold him in a way that keeps both of us safe. My son is now 10, and although we've healed much of his early childhood fear and trauma, he can still get off track and aggressive. So now I might gently encircle him with one of those kids' gym mats, because that helps. It helps me to keep us safe so I don't feel that I have to force myself on him or hold him too tightly. I can let him kick and punch and fight for his life and get that fear out the way he wasn't able to in utero. But when he was younger and smaller, I could encircle him from behind and gently hold him by embracing him. and that would allow him to struggle against me and still keep us safe. But now that he's my height, it works well to use one of the many mats we have around our house. As I bring the physical limit to him and to help him stop from hurting, I don't say much. I might murmur a few words like, "Sweetie, I'm sorry you're having such a hard time," or "I'm so sorry that it's hard your friend left." But I really don't say what much because, remember, your child's in the midst of an emotional bad dream and he can't think. So I don't want to try to get him to talk. I don't want to try to redirect him or get him to make another choice. I really want him to be able to release and offload these feelings of fear that are driving the aggressive behavior. I want him to heal. And I want to keep us safe. So as I gently contain him, I silently pour in my love and connection, and I stay close. As Kristen said, my child feels alone, and he's not sure he's going to make it, and he thinks this bad dream might last forever. As I pour in my love and connection, maybe murmuring, "I'm right here. I know this is a bad ride, but we'll get through it." I'm anchoring my child. I'm anchoring him in the reality that he is good and that he can release and get through these bad feelings. This is what we call stay listening. I stay listen as my son offloads first the fear, which can look like anger, but really is fear, and then often the sadness that's underneath the fear. Some children will cry, tremble, arch, sweat, even laugh. These are all signs that a child is offloading, releasing, and healing those old hurts and fears. And afterwards, after I've stay listen, I find that my son's able to think well and that there's no aggressive behavior for many days. Then I know that me staying close and listening to him has helped him to heal some of that old hurt and fear that's stuck in his limbic system. He's been able to unload the gunk he's been carrying around in his emotional backpack. My son did a lot of hitting and hurting when he was younger. Now that he's 10, he's more likely to try to hurt something, especially something he cares about. But those of you with younger children may be struggling with things like biting and hitting. So I want to tell you about one of our instructors, Keiko Sato Perry. She has a wonderful anecdote about how she used the tools of setting limits, stay listening, and special time in tandem, like a three-legged stool, to help her son stop biting. And we don't have time to go through her whole story here, but her article is called "Resolving My Son's Biting," and you can find it on our website, handinhandparenting.org. And if you do a search for Keiko, K-E-I-K-O, or just put in the word biting, her really great anecdote will come up, and it's just a great a success story about working with a younger child's aggression. So I'd like to share about my son's latest attempt to hurt something. The other day, the back axle on his scooter broke. We took it to the shop to get a new axle, but they couldn't get to it right away, which meant that there would be no more scootering that day. So I went out to the car to break the news to him. Now, disappointment is very difficult for my son. My sense is it triggers all his old feelings of being abandoned. So he had his iPod in his hand, and I saw that he was about to try to smash it. So I gently put my hand on his to try to stop him from smashing the iPod. And then I held on to the iPod as he started to kick and thrash. Now, the car can be a great place to stay listen as it provides some natural containment. So I kept the iPod safe. I let him kick and thrash and yell how unfair it was. "Worst day ever," he yelled. "I know, sweetie," I murmured, "but I can't let you hurt your iPod." The kicking and the thrashing and yelling went on for about 5 minutes until he dissolved into tears. Then he had a good long cry, releasing the current disappointment as well as some of the old stuff too. After about 20 minutes, he said he was hungry, and we went to get something to eat, and then he was in great spirits for the rest of the evening. Now, I need to be very calm in order to stay listening in this manner. If I feel the least bit triggered or start to get angry myself, I immediately have to release my son and say, "I'm sorry, sweetie, that's as much as I can listen to you right now." And I might go wash my face in the bathroom or go out and walk around our building, or what works really well is if I just lay down. And because when I'm starting to feel tight and tense, that's when I know I need to get some support. In that moment, my old childhood hurts are being re-stimulated. And in order to, for me to offload my childhood hurts, I know I need to get some listening time. And now Kristen's going to explain the value of getting this kind of support and exactly how to do it.
Thank you so much, Kathy. I really loved how you shared how parents can become empowered in resolving these issues of aggression in their lives. So when a child hits, it takes a lot for us to listen to our child. How do we manage all of this, and how can we get support? Raising a child who expresses their feelings physically is very, very challenging. It can be isolating, as in not being included in playdates, or burning through your list of babysitters, or getting nasty emails from another parent. And it can be very difficult not to take your child's behavior personally, especially if the aggression is directed towards you. So our own intense feelings can lead to knee-jerk reactions that leave us feeling angry, ashamed, embarrassed, isolated, and like nobody understands us. We are really left unsupported and scared. We've learned that in order for an adult to listen to a child who is releasing some intense emotions, that we need to be listened to ourselves. We have a tool for that, and we call it listening partnerships. A listening partnership is an exchange of help between two parents. So I listen to a parent for a set period of time, and then that parent listens to me. And a listening partnership creates a safe space and a sense of trust, a place and a time where we can share our deepest, darkest thoughts and memories so that we can heal them and let them go. Listening time releases the heat that can occur inside of us when a child hits. The reason this is important is because you and your child are so intertwined. When things happen, I start doing this, and my child starts doing that. This develops a pattern of behavior. And when the patterns start hooking into one another, my child hits, and then I stomp over, and I want to intimidate. In this way, we perpetuate the pattern of the hitting behavior. These patterns of behavior, they even become predictable with our aggressive child. So we really want to notice everything that comes to mind when our child hits. And additionally, just as Kathy talked about our child getting re-stimulated by old memories, we as adults also get re-stimulated by old memories that we aren't aware of because they are implicit. In fact, we have an old backlog of these memories. So the same thing happens to us. When an implicit memory is re-stimulated, we respond neurologically. So that could mean an increased heart rate, emotions come up, perceptions come up, even old behaviors come up without us knowing why they're coming up. And it's as if we are back in that moment without any conscious awareness that we are recalling a memory. And furthermore, we often blame our child for making us feel that way because we don't have any awareness that we are pulling up a feeling that comes from a memory. So it's a really difficult cycle to be caught in. So in order to rework what happens when our child hits, and in order to help them heal the fear that's driving that hitting, not only do we need to reach out to our child differently, but we also need to be different as we reach out to our child. But what stops us is our own reactions, our own fears, our own worries, and our burdens to the aggressive behaviors. The fears that come up for us when our child hits and hurts interferes with our relationship with them. We may be afraid that they will be like Cousin Joey who spent time in prison, or that even more immediately, they're going to be kicked out of preschool. So our child's behavior triggers these worries in us. And these worries make it difficult for us to think well, to think good thoughts of our children, and to see them as caught in an emotional bad dream, and to see ourselves as being re-stimulated and to be present to help them through it. So your story around hitting is as important as your child's story around hitting. If you get support by getting some listening time, as you tell your story and express your feelings, you may start to relax around the issue. Then you can be more powerful in helping your child process and release the feelings that drive the hitting. And they, in turn, can leave the hitting behavior behind. So it's your story and your feelings about the hurting and the aggression that you will want to bring to a listening partner. You can start by studying your response to your child's hitting. Here are some good questions to start with to ask yourself in as you start listening time. Something like, so what is the urge that comes up within you? Do you want to shake your child, intimidate them, slap them, yank their arm, or say something like, don't you dare do that to your brother? When you were a child, what happened to you if you or someone around you hit someone else? What goes on inside of you? What is it that you don't say? What's in your head? You little brats, or you little something or another. How hot is the heat that you're feeling inside of you? What image is in your mind? Who does your child remind you of? You bring all of that to the safety of your listening partner. When we show what goes on inside of us, we can heal ourselves. You may laugh, cry, shake, sweat. These are all signs that you are offloading old hurts and old patterns and that you are healing. When we heal our old hurts, just like when we stay listening to our children and help them heal, we have a wider capacity for thinking. We can think better. We also have more patience and ability to see their aggression as fear. So the basics of a listening partnership are that each of you takes turns being the listener. You use a timer so the 30 minutes you set aside doesn't become an hour. While you are the listener, you offer respect, warmth, and full attention. You also remember that your partner is good. They're smart and trying to do their best. We don't interrupt your partner as we're listening, and we do not give advice. We don't try to fix anything. We don't judge what they're saying. We don't compare our experiences and say something like, oh, my sister's kid did that, and this is how she handled it. It worked great. And we also don't refer to the other person's experience in our own listening time. We don't refer to what someone shared afterwards either, like if we're having coffee with them, if they're a friend, or at the grocery store, or at school pickup. It's very confidential, everything that we talk about in listening time. And then we also fit listening time into what time we have available. If we have an hour, we might do 25 minutes each way. And if we have less, we may do 3 to 5 minutes each way. You can even get one-way emergency listening time when you're in the middle of a crisis. And both Kathy and I have experienced being caught in our own fears and the power of getting support through listening partnerships. And I'll share a story from my own experience. When I first started using the hand-in-hand listening tools, the effect was dramatic in my family. I was amazed at all the changes in my family. And then suddenly it seemed to hit a wall. The kids began to display a whole plethora of award-winning bad behaviors, particularly in public. And I thought, oh my gosh, it's bad enough to deal with this at home, but now we have to throw up all of our internal garbage on the streets. They were both creating big scenes of tantruming, screaming, and crying out in public every day or two. Additionally, I was having a hard time using the Parenting by Connection tools for some reason. The kids would attack me or run away from me if I would stay listening. They appeared rude and disrespectful. my 9-year-old son threw a rock and hit a car. I had neighbors coming outside to watch episodes. One of them said, "My children would never treat me that way." Once the mailman truck stopped and asked, "Is everything okay?" I felt so alone, embarrassed, confused, lost, and didn't know what direction to turn. And I knew I was in trouble. So in order to shift things, step one, I took this to my listening partnerships, and I even increased my listening time, and I asked for emergency listening time as I felt like I was really in a crisis. And I talked about my embarrassment and lack of ability to handle these intense situations. I didn't have the confidence in myself to make this work. Through tears, I talked about how much children's negative energies and disrespect hurt me and made my nerves raw and my brain unable to think. I got sweaty and I shook as I discussed how I was abused as a child and how my children's behaviors were bringing up the feelings I had as a scared 5-year-old. I was able to see how my feelings of powerlessness and isolation, dealing with the extreme off-track behaviors of my children, re-stimulated the time when I felt powerless and isolated as a small child. So after lots of listening time, I started to feel more clear-headed, and I started to realize that in the past, my children had been working on one layer of their hurts and fears, but now they were upping the ante by working on deeper hurts and heavier fears because they'd been through significant trauma. So this was causing more intensity for all of us. It was looking uglier on the outside with increased bad behaviors because the children were going to a deeper place. And I was able to think better. I could think strategically about the Parenting by Connection tools, shifting things around, adding where I could, and learning to master one of the tools that I had avoided in the past because I didn't feel adequate using it. And my listening partners supported me through the entire process. Step by step, I could see what I needed to do. A plan developed with all of this support. I wrote down a list of ideas when I would lose it or I would freeze. And the results were amazing. I reached a new level of empowerment, and I began to plan for and expect future moments of off-track behavior to support their healing process and to shed old, unhealthy patterns. And, of course, many tears were shed, as well as trembling and sweating, but I have never felt more connected to my children. And I feel like we have worked our way through many hurts to much more connected times. So now we've reached the end of the presentation part of our teleseminar, and we have time to take a question or two. So if you have a question or a comment, you can press *2, because everyone's muted right now. So you can press *2, and we will open up the line for you. It's like raising your hand when you press that.
And, Krista, we already have somebody's already raised their hand. I think she had her hand raised for quite a while from Beverly Hills, California. Did you see?
Yes, I do. There we go. Okay, they're still muted. There we go. I think we can hear you now.
Hello?
Yes, hello?
Oh, hi, yes. My name is Monica. I have a 3.5-year-old, little girl. And I've been using these tools that were presented to me, and I have seen a significant change on her behavior. But there is one thing that I just cannot seem to know how to deal, which is how to have her cooperate with me when I ask her to, let's say, sit down to eat, or just have her change, or just simply do something that I need her to do. I'm trying everything. Like, I understand that you don't want to do this right now, but I need you to sit down. And sometimes she just basically ignores me or just keeps doing whatever she wants to do. And I don't know. I just don't know what to do to have her cooperate with me.
Okay.
Kristen,
you can start, Kathy, if you want to.
Okay. Well, and you're doing regular special time with your daughter? Or?
Yes, I'm trying. I'm trying to make sure I sit down with her. And I was playing the role of a mother when I was doing the special time. I didn't know that I needed to take a less role. So that's something that I'm going to change most definitely.
Oh, great. Yeah, so definitely shifting your special time so that is the time that she's in power. And then we have a tool called Play Listening, which when there are those sticky moments when children won't cooperate, that there are ways to play through those moments. The talk on February 24th is going to talk in detail about play listening. Mm-hmm. So I encourage you to sign up for that call. There's a lot of anecdotes on how to play your way through transitions. I'm going to leave you with one other thought, and then maybe, Kristen, maybe we could take somebody's call that's specifically about aggression. But the times that are the most troubling, if you know that mealtime is always a problem, doing 5 or 10 minutes of special time right before mealtime where she does get to take the more powerful role, and then see how that transition is and see if you might, that kind of play where she feels deeply connected to you during that bit of special time beforehand would make the mealtime more an easier time.
Okay.
Yeah. And Kristen, did you have anything you wanted to add before we take somebody's call?
I would just maybe add to that, if a child naturally wants to be connected and cooperate with you. And so you can really read those moments as, oh, my child's not connected. And I do a lot of play listening, but I would also sometimes I would set a limit too. So if my daughter is knitting, for example, and she's not getting up to go set the table, I will gently and warmly put my hand over her knitting and set a limit and say, no, sweetie, you need to stop knitting now. And I don't say a lot, but I do it with warmth. And then that usually either brings a reaction up for her, so whatever's keeping us disconnected can come out, or it gives her the opportunity to shift and then go do what was supposed to happen at that point too. So that's another thing to keep in mind.
Great. Okay. Great. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. So is there somebody else who...
There's a call from San Jose.
Thank you. You're quicker at looking at these than I am. Can you unmute that person?
I can unmute them.
Thank you.
Somebody from San Jose. You're unmuted.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, hi. This is Heba, and... I have a 12-year-old daughter and a 5-year-old son, and I'm a single mother, and both of them went through a lot during and before separation, and my daughter goes to therapy as well, but she is, when she gets mad, I can't even hold her from the back. She's so strong, and I'm a small person, and she damaged many things, including her school iPad. During her tantrum or anger, she just threw it on the floor and didn't care about anything. She took a pen, made holes on the wooden railing of the stairs, and what upset her is that I deleted an online application where she made an inappropriate contact with a stranger. And that happened again when I wanted to verify that she did her homework. She always says that she did her homework when I verify that she didn't do her homework, and I insisted that she works on her homework, but she gets mad at me, and it's and then her brother picks up from her. So I don't know how to handle her display of aggression. And then she hit her brother a lot in the past, the way she was subject to when she was a child. And then now he learned every, like, he learned those, like, how to hit. I don't know if he learned it from her or because he saw things in the past or... But he also, when he gets mad, he doesn't hit her. He hits me. And he hits me when he's angry at me. And also, it happened that he caused problems at school. And it was only with one child that he loved very much. But he was aggressive with him for no reason that me and his parent was aware of. So... I'm telling facts. I don't know which question I need to answer, but at least, like, with my daughter, for instance, like, how can I touch her when she's angry? Like, protecting the iPad from her hand, that's, like, she's so quick. Like, the last time she was angry and she was about to throw the iPad on my face, and I was on the car, and I just, she was faster than me.
Yeah,
that's really, really hard, Ava. I'm really sorry that you're dealing with all this. That's a big situation for sure. And we, just so you know, we're at the end of our time, so we're going to have to make this a short response. But I would really start with listening time, first of all, because you probably have a lot of feelings around all of this, especially you said you're small, your children are getting older, and your son is picking up on aggressive behaviors as well. And you want to do the listening time and offload all these fears and worries and cares that you have so that you can approach your daughter from a place of calmness and good thinking as well. And also... You want to spend some time probably observing what is triggering your daughter, because oftentimes you can find these predictable patterns. And so if you know she might break her iPad, then you actually remove her iPad before something were to happen. Or, I mean, if she's hurting the stairs, you can't really remove a handrail, but you can remove things or make sure she's in a certain part of the house or something like that she would be getting upset, for example. It is ideal to be able to hold your child if they're hurting somebody. But if they're not hurting somebody or something, the child benefits significantly if you're just near them even. Like, if she won't let you touch her, and touching her actually triggers the aggressive behavior, which can be the case, because if they're feeling your warmth and safety, it can elevate their sense of safety and let them offload. So that's just something else to pay attention to, is sometimes we actually have to step back, especially if they have severe trauma. And this is the case with my daughter. I actually had to move away from her. I would get on my hands and knees, and I would hum. I wouldn't even say words. And I would say something like, "I'm right here, sweetheart," to anchor her so she can offload. But she didn't, like, my closeness was actually too threatening. It was too much for her. And so a big part of this, too, is observing to figure out what is going to work with your particular child. So I don't know if, Kathy, you have any quick other thoughts to add to that.
Well, it sounds like as a single parent, there's a lot that's happening. And so I would just echo what Kristen said about the first thing for you to do is actually to get some listening time and to get some more support. Listening time will help you be able to think more clearly. Support might be in the way of a private consultation with one of our certified instructors. Instructors all offer private consultations, and when there's something really big like this in a family, that a private consultation can be exactly the place to work on it. And it might also look like just getting some high schoolers to come in a couple of times a week to give you a break so that you are more resourced and able to support your children and to be able to think more clearly. Because when we're in the midst of these patterns over and over again, it's very difficult to break the pattern, to break the dance, unless we step outside, get listening time, and get some support. So those are the big things that I would say to look at, and which leads us into, actually talking about some of those ways to get support. Yeah, Kristen?
Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll go through more of these too, Heba, right now.
Yeah.
Too. And we have one, an online self-directed course called No More Hitting that might be of interest to you as well. But, I've just really enjoyed this teleseminar with you, Kathy. And if you could, yeah, go ahead and close up, that would be great.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you. Cause we're a few minutes over. So, if anybody has to leave, we understand this will all be on the recording. Kristen, I really enjoyed collaborating with you too. It's been great working with you to share all this good information with our good loving parents and caregivers that have joined us and that will also listen to the recording. Before I talk about the resources, I'd just like to take a moment to share some of the main thoughts that we've covered today. Aggressive behaviors are rooted in fear, whether it stems from a current threat to your child or something that happened a long time ago. And when a child's fears get re-stimulated, the child's inner experience is very intense and they may question their own ability to survive. Every child has a natural instinct to heal, and that healing process can look like fighting, crying, sweating, tantruming, and even laughter. We can support our child's healing process by moving in close, making eye contact, and listening, and this is what we call stay listening. We can also boost our child's overall sense of connection by doing special time, sort of a connection vitamin. And with the hard work of parenting, we also need to be listened to. Listening partnerships is a place where we can heal from our own hurts so we can think better and offer more patience to support the instinctive healing process in our child. So we hope you've enjoyed this teleseminar. We have more free teleseminars coming up, including part two of this topic called How to Stop My Child from Hurting People. That's happening Monday, February 24th at 11:30 a.m. Pacific Time. And again, our presenters are they're certified instructors. They're going to go into much more depth about the listening tools. And you can register at handinhandparenting.org. And as we mentioned, even if you can't attend live, you'll get a free playback. We also have available many other free resources, including our monthly newsletter, articles, blog with parent success stories, and membership to our free online Yahoo discussion group that supports parents around the world every day. And it's a great place to post questions because Patty Whippler, our founder, answers people's questions, as well as several other certified instructors who moderate the group. And many parents ask us, well, how do you find a listening partner? We think one of the best ways is to put yourself in a supportive community where you can get regular listening time and learn the skills more deeply. And that would be by enrolling in our signature class of Building Emotional Understanding, or called BEU for short. Kristen and I both lead the BEU class via phone or Skype through Hand in Hand, and we also both teach in person locally. I'll be leading a BEU class in LA with certified instructor Sadie Van Gelder. We're starting a Sunday series on February 23rd and a Wednesday evening series on March 5th. And for more information and to register, you can go to the website, handinhandparenting.org, and just if you type in SoCal, S-O-C-A-L, in the search window. And that information is also on my Facebook page, Parenting by Connection with Kathy Gordon. And Kristen, you want to Sorry, and I'm also leading one via phone or Skype for Hand in Hand that'll start Monday evening at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time, March 17th. Forgot to add that.
Great.
Thanks.
Great. Yes, and this is Kristen again, and I'll be leading two upcoming BEUs. One is an online class for 6 Tuesdays beginning March 4th, and you can find the info on Hand in Hand's website. And then I'll also be leading a Denver-based Building Emotional Understanding class for 6 Thursday evenings starting March 13th. And you can find that by going to the Hand in Hand website and typing in Denver. And all this can also be found on my Facebook page called Parenting by Connection with Kristen Volk.
We also offer safe, self-paced, self-guided video classes from our Parent Rescue series. And as we mentioned, there's a class on setting limits, sibling rivalry, sleep, and we mentioned that if you've turned into this call on aggression, you might want to check out the class called No More Hitting. And that video class takes you step by step through everything we've outlined tonight or today and more. And Hand in Hand also just rolled out a new membership program. So for a small monthly fee, you'll have access to all the self-guided videos and a monthly question and answer support call with a certified instructor. I mentioned certified instructors offer private consultations for the times when you need a lot of support for big issues. And we offer so much more, so please explore our website. We're a nonprofit organization and depend on your donation to provide free services like this parenting call and the many articles on our website, our free parent discussion Yahoo group, and scholarships for classes and instructor training. It's easy to donate any amount, and anything that you could donate really helps. You can just click on the donate button on the website and give whatever you can. And together we can support parents everywhere.
And with that, we're going to wrap up this call. So thank you so much for joining us today. We hope you've enjoyed the teleseminar, and it's been really wonderful to have you here with us.
Yes, thank you all for being the wonderful, loving parents that you are. Thank you for all the good, loving, hard work you do and for being here with us today. So please keep in touch. Let us know how we can be of service to you and yours. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for joining us. Hand in Hand is here to help you get the support you need for your work as a parent. To download podcasts on additional parenting topics, go to handinhandparenting.org/store. We look forward to connecting with you again soon.